I don't know what you're talking about.
Laurie says in a steely voice.
You pretended to love him.
The boy goes on.
So you and Carl could play this trick, and now he's dead.
She does not like that word being said. She does not like it. And in a flash she knows that Carl is outside, and all she has to do is cry out, and then the fat boy would know all about dead. But instead she says,
Nothing you are saying makes any sense to me.
With that, the fat boy erupts. His moon-like face screws into a horrible mask of hate, and he shouts,
You lied to him. You kissed him. You made him think you cared about him. You used him.
That isn't true.
Laurie finds her whole body is shaking, maybe vibrating in time with the fat boy, who is wobbling like a jelly made out of explosives, his face a big swollen blackcurrant. But then he becomes quite still. He stares into her eyes, and he whispers,
You are an evil person. You are a person who pretends to love people so you can control them, but you don't care about anyone except yourself.
Laurie wants to shout, That isn't true! Again, but she can't, because she is wondering if it is true, and for a second the guilt wave knocks her backwards. But then another wave rises up in her to meet it, a wave of anger. Anger at Daniel for doing this to her, for making her feel this way, for weighing her down with death and making her carry it around with her forever, when she barely knew him. She barely knew him. And now, jumping up, she shouts back at the fat boy who has come into her house to do this to her.
Daniel didn't even know me. I saw him 3 times in my entire life. I didn't ask him to write my name on the floor. I didn't ask him to do any of that.
Sparks are shooting from her. She is so sick of boys and all the things they want from her, endlessly, endlessly wanting and pulling and draining her away.
He didn't know me. I didn't know him. I didn't know about his life. I didn't know his mom was sick.
The toad's little squinty eyes open in surprise.
His mom?
You didn't know that?
Laurie's dad had told her. He'd heard it from his friend, the Seabrook principal. But it looks like it's news to Toad Boy.
She's dying. How can you not know that? Weren't you supposed to be his friend?
The Toad Boy looks at a loss.
How about the swimming team? Did he tell you about that?
The swimming team?
How he wanted to quit, but he couldn't?
The Toad Boy frowns. Laurie laughs. This is just too funny.
What? Some friend? Do you actually know anything about him at all?
The toad doesn't reply. He is totally confused because he's come to punish her and take revenge on her and put the blame on her for what's happened. But now he's finding out it might not be so simple as the video. It might be that some other things were bothering Daniel too, that someone else might have been able to help him with. E.g., him, Fatso, his so-called friend. You can see it sinking in. He falls back into the armchair with a look of shock crossing his face. But instead of wanting to make him feel better and say, Hey, it's okay, we're in this together, and share the pain they're both feeling between them, instead she finds, now the tables have turned, she wants to finish him. She wants to pay him back for what he's done, for making her feel evil and loveless, for making her feel rotten and black inside. When if he knew the first thing about her, he'd know that she's a lovely, sweet person that everyone likes, and that love is all she cares about and all she thinks about all day long, FYI, Mr. Fat Slob, Mr. Disgusting Monster, Mr. Giant Repulsive Toad, who nobody will ever want to kiss, even if they're blind. She wishes he was dead, cold in a grave somewhere too. She would love to put him there. She would love to really hurt him. She would love to go over to him and scratch his face, scratch, and dig until there's nothing left. No face, just red, like a plate of spaghetti bolognese after you've eaten all the spaghetti off it. And she even gets up and takes a step towards him, and emerging out of his reverie, she sees his eyes widen in terror.
Everything okay in here?
Mom's face in the door.
Yes, thank you, Mom.
The face that Laurie presents back to her is sweet and composed.
Would your friend like some OJ? Or some Pepsi?
Mom wonders.
No, thank you, Mrs. Wakeham.
Toad Thing says.
Actually, he was just about to leave.
On cue, the fat boy rises from his chair. Mom nods and closes the door again. Laurie and the fat boy stare at each other. He is trembling. In his eyes there is despair and not understanding, as far back as she can see.
Goodbye,
she says. He goes to the door and down the stairs. She hears him open the front door and shut it. Crossing over the landing, she pushes back the curtain so she can see him in the driveway. He is standing there in the light of the security lamp, clutching his head as if he's experiencing a tremendous pain. Maybe it's the same pain that's in her stomach. He stays there so long without moving that the security lamp switches off. She pulls the curtain closed in one quick motion and sinks onto the bed and cries until the duvet is soaked.
I did love him.
She croaks through snot and tears to Lala, the teddy bear. And as she says it, she knows it's true. And she knows that Carl knew it too, even before she did. And that's why he did what he did. And she realizes that love doesn't go in straight lines. It doesn't care about right or wrong, or about being a good person, or even about making you happy. And she sees, like in a vision, that life and the future are going to be way more complicated than she ever expected. Impossibly, unbearably complicated and difficult. In that same moment, she feels herself grow older, like she's finished a level in a video game and moved on invisibly to the next stage. It's a tiredness that takes over her body, a tiredness like nothing before, like she swallowed a ton weight. And so she's glad when her phone buzzes with a new message and she can stop thinking about it. When she checks, she finds that in fact she's got messages from lots of people in the last hour. From Janine, from Denise, from Kellyanne, Shannon, Richard Dunstable, Seabrook, Graham Canning, St. Mary's, and Leo Coates, Gonzaga. She reads them one by one, replies, replies to the replies, time slipping by, phone buzzing, messages wrapping around her like a cocoon, protecting her from the thought of the toad boy, of what is in her stomach, of everything else. Obviously the text from Shannon she deletes without even reading. Laurie and Janine have been ignoring Shannon ever since Laurie found out Shannon told Kimberly Cross that Janine hates Lloyd Dalton, even though she knows Kimberly's boyfriend and Lloyd Dalton are best friends. It's as she's sending the message to the trash that she gets her idea. When something annoying or stupid or evil, or all three, like Shannon, is in your life, the best thing to do is treat it like it doesn't exist. So, that's what she should do with the invaders in her stomach, too. While they are living inside it, she will cut her stomach out of her life, just like she and Janine and Denise have cut out Shannon. She will act like it's not there until she's sure the problem has been solved. She knows her body will not like this. Her body wants to eat food. It wants to grow and make itself stronger. Even now, her stomach is mewling with hunger, not knowing that it's in control of the enemy. But she has the answer to this, too. In fact, the answer has been here all along, tucked away inside her favorite bear, a baggie of at least 100 pills, enough to last her for a couple of weeks at least. She reaches for Lala, finds the secret tear underneath his left arm. She'll start now with one pill, or maybe two. Soon she'll have everything back under control. Something is following Carl. In the beginning he just feels it, in the classroom, in Texaco, outside Laurie's house. It's watching him, but it doesn't let him see it. He turns round and it's gone. He asks Barry if he's noticed anything.
Like what?
Barry says.
Just like someone following us around.
Shit, you mean like the pigs?
But Carl doesn't mean the pigs. He doesn't know what he means. But just because he doesn't know what it is, doesn't stop it from watching him. Even in places where it's impossible to watch him. In Dino's flat, or in his own room. Or in his dreams, where he starts to feel it too. The same pair of eyes that track him invisibly when he's awake. There, silently, in the dream space. For a long time, though, he doesn't see it. It's just a feeling. So he smokes more and more of the super skunk, and tries to bury it under the feeling of nothing. And then one night, he is with Janine. They are in the greenhouse, talking about what to do about the plan, which is over because Carl ruined it. He doesn't remember why he did it. It was a very good plan, the way that Janine explained it.
We trick Laurie's mum and dad, so they think she is going out with Skippy, but really, she is going to meet you. They won't know about you. Skippy won't know about you. The only people that know about you will be the three of us. Laurie will have to be with Skippy a little bit sometimes for the plan to work. But it won't mean anything. And the two of you can be together, my love.
And she ran her tongue over Carl's neck. And Carl understood. Laurie would be with Skippy sometimes, but it wouldn't mean anything. The same way it didn't mean anything when he was with Janine. It was just a trick to fool her parents, so she could say, I'm going to meet Skippy. And then she would go to meet Carl. He understood. He could see. It was an excellent plan. But then at the last minute, when it was actually happening, he realized he didn't understand. Most of them did, but he couldn't explain it to the part that didn't. And he worried about whether the boy Skippy understood. That's why he sent the film from the roof of Ed's, so that everyone would know what was going on. Everyone would know that Laurie was his. But you see, that was not part of the plan. So what happened then was, instead of bringing him and Laurie together, he has actually split them apart. And now he is in Janine's granny's greenhouse, and everything is different. She is telling him Laurie will not see him, will not talk to him. She is crying. He is breaking her granny's flower pots. She is begging him to stop. She is telling him that it will blow over, that Laurie will come around, that she will talk to her. She is saying, you can't blame yourself for this, Carl. She keeps scrambling up his leg to try and kiss him, and he keeps pushing her back, but then she gets close enough that he sees something. I love you, she says, but he doesn't hear her. He is staring deep into her eyes. The dead boy is staring back out at him. Carl always thought it was him. Now he knows for certain. After that, dead boy becomes braver. He will appear not just in eyes and dreams, but like a hologram beside Carl, or behind him, or in front of him, there and gone, a split second at a time. No one else can see him, only Carl. See what? They say. A person? Yeah, right. Haven't you heard the saying, don't get high on your own supply? And then they laugh. And right in the middle of them, dead boy will be standing, staring at Carl with his big, empty eyes. Carl tries to get used to him and ignore him. Then he tries to fight him, to hit him, kick him, stab him. One day in school, when he sees him standing in the window, he throws a chair at him. He screams at him in his bedroom, stay away from me. But nothing works. Just Mom appears at the door with messy hair, asking if he wants a sleeping pill. It gets hard to concentrate on things. Mark gives him jobs to do, and he can't find the money afterwards. Did he forget to take it? Did he leave it somewhere?
You better get it from somewhere, dude,
Barry says.
Otherwise he's going to freak.
So Carl ends up replacing it himself. After a while, he starts running out of replacement money. But Mom's written her ATM pin at the back of her address book.
Get it together,
Barry says.
You snooze, you lose in this game, bro.
Barry is jealous because Carl has been suspended for a week because of throwing the chair. But being suspended is not that great. Most of the time he just goes to Dino's gaff. Dino lives in the flats behind the shopping mall with his mom. Only he calls her Ma. She looks like his granny. And most of the time she stays in the kitchen drinking cups of tea, and pretending not to know what they're doing. Outside, everything smells like piss. The blokes are all scobes in tracksuits, and the birds are mingers with ponytails and earrings as big as their heads. They laugh at Carl and call him a Seabrook bum boy and a poshy. But no one ever tries to mess with him, because they know Dino has a sawn-off in a sports bag under his bed.